You are watching Game Time Decisions. I am Gabriel Morenz. Welcome to the program that puts money where its fantasies are on the Fantasy Sports Network. Let's do this thing. The countdown to kickoff continues. The National Football League, AFC and NFC Conference Championship games set to kick off. Mark Lawrence will join us. Playbook.com's Mark Lawrence will join us. We'll break down the football games. We'll break down a couple of college basketball games with Mark Lawrence as well. Dane Martinez, Fantasy Sports Network Radio. Dane Martinez will join us. We'll also talk some NFL football, all aspects of this, betting, fantasy purposes. We'll run through the DraftKings prices. And, you know, everyone's going to be loading up, man, on the Green Bay Packers and the Atlanta Falcon players. We'll try to find some value picks on the board this week. And speaking of the New England Patriots and the Pittsburgh Steelers, we couldn't get Tom Brady on the show today, but we got Tom Brady Sr. on the program today. That's right. Tom Brady's father will join us on the show this afternoon. And Tom Brady's father has been pretty vocal in the past. He's sort of like the surrogate. Tom Brady doesn't really say much publicly, yet his father has said stuff publicly in the past. So we'll get his take on the game against the Pittsburgh Steelers, his take on Roger Goodell deciding to go to Atlanta as opposed to the AFC Conference Championship game again. I don't think Goodell's ever going back to Foxborough type of deal. But, you know, to Goodell's defense, it is the final game ever in the Georgia Dome. This is it. It's pretty crazy, actually. It's going to be the final game in the Georgia Dome. You imagine if they go to the Super Bowl in their final game in the Georgia Dome. It's going to be a crazy game, that game, man. You know, we've been looking at this game from all different angles and stuff, and what can you really say? Whoever has the ball last is going to win this football game. Like, that's, you look at this game, and it's almost hard not to want to take the 5 points with the Green Bay Packers, isn't it? But, man, Atlanta are damn good, man. These guys put up over 35 points a game when they're playing on their home field. So we're going to break it down. I look forward to talking some football on the program today. Now, speaking of football, there's been a lot of talk about relocation as of late. Of course, the St. Louis Rams went to Los Angeles, and now the L.A. Rams. A lot of talk about the Raiders moving to Las Vegas. And, of course, the San Diego Chargers are now the Los Angeles Chargers. Now, the Chargers unveiled their logo last week. A logo that was met with ridicule, and rightfully so. And we talked about this logo. It looks like a reject Dodgers logo that a three-year-old designed, and sort of added a lame-ass, sort of lightning bolt type of deals to the logo. Well, you know, the public reaction was heard by the National Football League and by the Chargers. I got to believe that Goodell picked the phone and said, "What the hell are you guys doing? Like, you know, seriously? Like you can't come up better than what you did." Now, they got mercifully booed. The Chargers were announced, and the logo was put up on the screen at a Laker and a Clipper game, and, you know, they were relentlessly mocked and booed. You know, they're off to a great start in Los Angeles. You roll into a town that doesn't really even want you there. Secondly, you rip off the beloved Los Angeles Dodgers logo. So, yeah, the Chargers, they've decided, they said, no, that logo's dead. It's like the shortest lived logo ever. It's like shorter than Mike Piazza's time with the Marlins, shorter than Baylor's time as the number one ranked team in college basketball. So they've got a new logo right now. And yeah, the new logo is actually, hey, it's acceptable. At least it looks like the damn Chargers right now. At least it sort of looks like the Chargers. But like a lot of things, you know, we can reference Seinfeld. And you remember the episode when Costanza slept with the cleaning lady and he got her a cashmere sweater. Except there was a red dot on that sweater. Except you could only see that red dot if you knew about the red dot. Now, it's the same thing with this new Chargers logo. I can't unsee it. It's basically an LA Dodger logo still, but you change the colors of it. Like, I don't understand. What was your freaking rush to get a logo out so fast anyways for? But for a league like the National Football League that makes as much money as they do, their contempt is starting to be pretty evident, isn't it? I mean, you know, who's kidding who? The Raiders are going to be leaving Oakland. The bottom line is the National Football League makes billions of dollars, yet they expect states that have no money to build them stadiums. And the bottom line is now, unless you build us a stadium, we're going to leave. That's the message that's been sent from the National Football League. And truth be told, it doesn't matter how crap-ass the logo is. It doesn't matter how crap-ass the stadium that the teams are playing in. And it doesn't matter how many freaking people are showing up to the games. The Chargers are going to be playing in front of like 28,000 people. It doesn't matter. Because as long as bozos like you and me continue to watch this crap, Goodell's going to laugh his ass all the way to the freaking bank. Game Time Decisions continues. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. We've got a great show today. Mark Lawrence will join us in a moment or two. Tom Brady's father, Tom Brady Sr., will join us on the program. And Dane Martinez. So we're talking football, and a little college basketball on the show today. Yesterday, we talked about Antonio Brown's Facebook live stream feed live from the Pittsburgh Steelers locker room. I said it was much ado about nothing, yet this story has lived on for a couple of days. Is Mike Tomlin was less than impressed with this. And the crazy thing is, it's not the first time Brown's done this, but it's the first time that Tomlin has found out about this. A lot of people feel as though that Brown somehow violated a code by letting people into the Steelers room after the game. And, you know, whatever, man. You know, it is what it is. And the fact that when you saw the players on Antonio Brown's feed the other day, did they look violated to you? Were any of the players? Like, all these controversies are media made. Tomlin's pissed. He tells Antonio Brown, hey, don't broadcast my freaking speech from the locker room ever again, all right? And it's over. But the media wants this to go on, and Ben Roethlisberger's doing interviews about it now. And I mean, come on, guys. Let's talk about the actual game itself. And the sad thing is, it was freaking entertaining. It was more entertaining than any of the crap the NFL's been producing this year. So Tom Brady's father is going to join us, Tom Brady Sr. Dane Martinez, Mark Lawrence joins us right now. What's going on, Mark?
Doing terrific, Gabe. How's everything going?
Hey, we're doing good. Mark. I'm looking forward to the Final Four. We had a great weekend last weekend in the National Football League. And it's funny, last week we talked about how there were eight teams, and I think we can make a case and an argument for seven of them, maybe eight of them, including the Houston Texans, to cover the number. And that point spread ended up being extremely close to the closing number. But here we are once again with four football teams that, if somebody told you, I got this team to win the Super Bowl, you really couldn't tell them they're crazy. You can make a legitimate argument for all four teams still playing right now again.
Yeah, I don't think Roger Goodell could have ordered up any other four teams and been more promising than he did in this particular championship series here this weekend. These are four incredibly talented football teams with four incredibly talented quarterbacks, and I think that's the reason why we're watching these four teams this weekend, because of their quarterback play.
All right, the line really hasn't moved in this Packer game at all. It's been sitting at five, but the total keeps climbing. Mark, I know your database is a deep one. It's rare that we get totals posted in a 60 range. 2012 Lions and Saints, that game did go over the number, but I think it's going to go up. I know like some of the so-called sharps thought it was too high, but Johnny Public's going to start betting this thing as the game approaches, and no one's going to be betting the under in this game.
I can't see much support going to the under other than, as you say, the sharps who look for value and see a total that's never been that high before. But it's very difficult to make the case for the under in the football game. You've got two lightning offenses here. And of the four teams that are here, you have the two weakest defenses. And like I say, two offenses that know how to put points up on the scoreboard here. I have to probably look to the over here. You won't find me doing it because of the total, but I can understand why this total will grow.
And if we look at the numbers, too. The Falcons are 5-1 right now. Matt Ryan's played in 6 playoff games. 5 of them have gone over the number. Falcons 9-0 to the over in the Georgia Dome this year. An incredible now 14-2-1 to the over on the season. We all know about them scoring 33.9 points per football game. Even more impressive, at home they're scoring 35.1 points per football game. An offensive juggernaut, and in fact, it's the 8th best offense in NFL history.
It's incredible. I mean, they've just been lighting the scoreboard up. It's because of the MVP-type season that Matty Ryan's having this year, and also arguably the best wide receiver in all the National Football League, Julio Jones, on their side of the ball. That's not to deflect from Aaron Rodgers and what he's done for the Green Bay Packers in this charge that they've led down this stretch, on this huge win streak that they're on coming into this football game as well. But tip of the hat to the Atlanta Falcons. They do deserve to be here. We know all about the other three teams and their other three Hall of Fame quarterbacks, but again, this is going to be, I think, another well-lit scoreboard as well.
Yeah, you know, the Packers' season average is 28 points per game, but during their recent win streak, they're putting up 34 points per game. The Packers now 7-2 to the over on the road this season. I saw, Mark, as far as trends are concerned, and I didn't get the playbook yet this week, so I didn't see the database, but I know that favorites are 4-0 straight up and 3-1 against the spread the last 4 NFC Conference Championship games. I don't want to put you in the hot seat right now, but any trends as far as rematches are concerned? It's extremely rare. Last week we had all rematches, and here we are again with a couple of rematches.
Well, we've got rematches in both football games here. At this stage of the season, championship games, the rematches haven't meant much of anything. If anything at all, it's favored the dog slightly, but nothing enough to go out and make a play on. I will say this, that it's difficult to beat a good team, quality team like this 2 times in a row or 2 times in the same season, especially at this stage of the football season here. I think the key operative word for the 2 games here this weekend, Gabe, is streaks. I mean, my goodness, you got Green Bay on an 8-game win streak, Atlanta on a 5-game win streak, and we're not even over to the Pittsburgh-New England game yet, where they're on 9-8-game win streak. So the hot hand has been really delivering the goods thus far these football playoffs.
Yeah, it's easy to say, because everyone's saying, now you got to have a good quarterback to make it to the Super Bowl. Well, yeah, it's not rocket science. We're sort of aware of that, but I've always said this too, and you look back, when the Packers won the Super Bowl, when the Steelers won the Super Bowl, the Giants 2 Super Bowls, it's all about getting hot at the right time. And we saw that with Green Bay. People were panicking. And hell, I was calling them out mid-season. Yet they peaked at the right time. And Aaron Rodgers was talking about that. He said he's been in the league a long time, and he's realized it's all about getting hot at the right time in this league.
Well, the Packers have been pretty hot against fellow playoff teams all year long as well, Gabe. You take a look, they're 6-2 straight up, 6-1-1 to the spread against other playoff teams this year. So they've really enjoyed digging in, going toe-to-toe against other fellow playoff teams. And there's nothing you can knock about the Atlanta Falcons. I think the only thing that we pointed out in this week's football newsletter is that the dog in the Falcon playoff games, or the Falcons, I should say, are just 3-9 straight up and 2-9-1 to the spread in playoff games off a win. So they very seldom do. They put back-to-back games together here. This is a game here, I think, you talk of Matty Ryan, 14 touchdowns, no interceptions the last 5 games. Aaron Rodgers, 21 touchdowns, 1 interception, his last 8 games on both of these win streaks here. So you know what the formula has been. The formula has been this quarterback, the hot quarterback and the hot hand in these football games.
I think Atlanta wins, but I think the 5 is a little high. To me, it's like an Arena Football League game. It's whoever has the ball last wins this game.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, I see just exactly right. Whoever touches the ball scores last, most likely a field goal, whether it's that or a touchdown. But, you know, the Packers averaging 32 points a game in this win streak here. They're hot themselves right now. So, you know, like we said in the newsletter, Jerry Reed said, when you're hot, you're hot. These 2 football teams are sizzling right now.
Well, you know, the Steelers and the Patriots, a little bit different when we look at a rematch, only because, you know, Landry Jones played in that football game. And obviously, obviously the Pittsburgh Steelers are a different football team. You know, the Patriots, six consecutive AFC Conference Championship games. Unbelievable run that they're on. But something that caught my eye, they're just 1-6 against the spread in their last seven AFC Conference Championship games. Here they are laying 5.5. If the other game's all offense, and I know we've got big, you know, we got the big three, and you got Brady and Edelman, etc. But the fact is, you know, the Patriots are the best defense standing left, only giving up 15 points per football game. And this Pittsburgh Steeler defense has really come on, man, with these young guys getting better and the changes in the starting lineup and Bud Dupree playing as well as he is and Timmons and Shazier. The Steeler defense is better than their numbers indicate. This could be a lower scoring football game.
Yeah, this is a matchup, Gabe. These two teams both have one common denominator. They rank in the top 10 offensively and defensively in the league in total stats. They're the only two teams, these two teams, the Patriots and the Steelers, that do rank in the top 10 in total team defense. So I think you could see a little bit more of an X's and O's type football game here. The stat that really knocked our socks off from this week's football newsletter is favors the New England Patriots in this one sense, that they did lose in the AFC Championship game last year. And the reason I'm pointing that out is because teams who make it back to the playoffs the following year who were in that role and they're hosting a playoff game, they're 38-4 straight up, 30-11-1 to the spread since 1980. It's a big, strong number supporting New England in that particular situation. But you can't fault the Steelers here. My goodness, the last nine times they've been a playoff road dog, they've gone 7-1-1 to the spread.
It's a really interesting matchup here. The underdog 10-4 against the spread the last 14 in the series. The Patriots 2-0 against the Steelers as well, but you know, Tomlin was only there for one of them, which is interesting. You know, to me, once again, I think you can make an argument for both teams, but I like the underdog in this game, to be honest with you.
Well, I'm leaning the underdog in this game as well here, Gabe. Tomlin's been to the two AFC Championship games. He's won and covered both of those football contests. He himself has done just that. And you're talking about this Killer Bees football team. Not only the three Killer Bees, you can make it a fourth Killer Bee because Boswell, their field goal kicker, got all their scoring, all their points last week. So you got four Killer Bees working for the Pittsburgh Steelers coming into this football contest here. And, you know, there's a lot of room to hang a cut number here as well. I think this could go well to come down to whoever scores last wins this game as well. You've got some hang room here for Pittsburgh as well. I think the Steelers grab the money in this game. I'm with you.
Yeah, I saw the books got beat pretty good, and they must have, because like I said yesterday to Malinsky, I said even I did well this weekend. So yeah, the Johnny Idiot won. I was glad to get be part of the public crowd at least there. But once again, I look at these games. I think teasers could be a nice play here. You know, there's a lot of openings. You can make arguments for both sides. I mean, you know, the teaser getting it up to over 53.5, maybe the Packers up to 12, Steelers up to 12. There's a lot of different teaser angles this week.
Well, I think the teasers work real well with the dogs this week because you're taking them from where they are right now, the spreads, and you're carrying them through 7 points. So you get both dogs getting substantial points here, taking double digits with both dogs in teasers. And what's interesting here also, Gabe, is the fact that they did put numbers up on the potential Super Bowl matchups here. And New England would be favored 4.5 over Green Bay, 6 over Atlanta. Pittsburgh would be 1 over Atlanta and pick against Green Bay. So those numbers are out there right now. It'll be interesting to see exactly who ends up making the Super Bowl this weekend.
Mark, before we let you go, a couple of quick takes on college basketball tonight, SEC. Last night we cashed a ticket with Mississippi State, getting the 14.5. We also cashed the over as well. We look to keep it rolling tonight. Florida at South Carolina, the Gamecocks are on a roll. They really don't get a lot of national respect ever, or really bettors respect. They're 14-3 straight up, but they're undefeated with Sindarius Thornwell in the lineup. He was suspended, but the 11 games he's played, they haven't lost. The Gators are 5-0 straight up in SEC play. Carolina's now 4-0 in SEC play. What do you make of this basketball game with the Gamecocks laying 1.5?
Well, I sure would have loved to have seen the game go the other way, and I would have jumped all over South Carolina as the home dog. This game opened up at pick, and I think what the basketball purists see is this ferocious defense South Carolina plays. They're number three in the country in total team defensive field goal percentage, allowing just 36.4% from the floor. What's also interesting about South Carolina this year, they've defeated all three teams they played that had greater than 800 records. So the bigger the opponent, the better they played. So South Carolina justified that move is correct. I'm only concerned about the revenge aspect. South Carolina did take Florida out last year. Tough game for me to go to. Put a gun to my head, they probably stay at home with the Gamecocks in the contest.
Notre Dame and Florida State, an intriguing matchup tonight. This Florida State team, you know, you're in the state of Florida, so you know all about these guys. 16-2 straight up right now. Some impressive wins against some big-time programs as well this year. 16-2 straight up. 11-5 against the spread right now. They're 8-2 against the spread on their home court as well. But with that being stated, the Notre Dame Fighting Irish have been a pretty good road team this year. I tend to get burnt, Mark, and there's a couple of times I've had a couple of bad college bets over the last week in which I've taken points with road dogs, even though Michigan did cover last night. But I've taken the points of the road dogs, and oftentimes, you know, home court is so important in college basketball. When the game gets away from you, it gets away from you. But with that being stated, this feels like a close basketball game tonight with Florida State and Notre Dame.
It does to me too, Gabe. You got Florida State, really highly accurate team, number 7 in offensive field goal percentage this year, shooting over 50% from the floor. Revenge for Notre Dame in the football contest. The game sets the Florida State. They're off a 13-point loss. Notre Dame pulled an upset in their last game. And Florida State loves to play 10 deep on this basketball team. They'll change players. They'll bring five fresh guys in, and these five fresh guys are almost as good as a starting five. That's what wears other teams down. But Notre Dame can play that type of basketball, that brand of basketball. You're talking 6 points to a good quality Notre Dame team playing with revenge. I'm with you. I have to grab the points with the Irish in this contest.
Yeah, Noles are 7-3 to the over on their home court as well, Mark. I was taking a look at the over of this basketball game. I think you can get there.
I'm not going to go either way to the total in the contest here, if for no other reason, just the fact that it's Notre Dame, and Mike Bray likes to get a little bit defensive in his manners, but this Florida State team can light it up, especially, like I say, because they do go 10 deep.
Before we let you go, Mark, anything in the National Basketball Association catch your eye this evening? And I was talking about this yesterday, and it's amazing how many teams are playing back-to-back, and they're playing 3 games in 5 nights, etc. Something really has to be done about this, because it's tough. You really have to take the schedule into account right now, and then you have to hope, you know, that they don't pull the players too early. You either have tired teams who just wave the flag and they tap out, or secondly, you get coaches who are like, yeah, we're down by 18 and I would try to come back, but I'm playing tomorrow night in Utah again, and I got to get on a plane an hour after this game is over, so you know what, I'm gonna quit in this game. It's causing a problem, I think, competitively in the NBA, actually.
It is. You got two teams playing tonight that are going to play tomorrow, Washington and the New York Knicks, both in the contest here. Washington comes favored off a win, Memphis off a loss, off an upset loss here. I probably lean to the Grizzlies for the scheduling situation. The other game I'm looking at is I have to wonder if Golden State isn't looking ahead to Houston off that big win they had against the Cavaliers. They got their revenge there. They got Houston revenge on deck, and they waxed Oklahoma City earlier. They beat them by 26. This could be a good spot for the Thunder here tonight.
Yeah, you know, I got to wonder. Oklahoma City a little worn out right now, actually, though. You know, they played on Sunday. They played on Monday. Malinsky brought this up. There's no rest for these guys ever, Mark, for Oklahoma City, because they're always on these, you know, the high-profile TV games. Think about that. They played Sunday night, Monday night in Los Angeles on MLK Day, and now, boom, Wednesday night, big TV game against the Golden State Warriors.
Yeah, well, that could be the reason that that Monday night loss was as bad as it was, a 22-point loss. But, you know, I'm looking at these factors here, 22-point loss, 26-point revenge, Golden State off that big 35-point win over the Cavaliers. That all makes, for me, a juicy dog, especially a winning team like this. I don't like the situation with the rest factor here that the Thunder has to go up against, but being the team that they are, that's the reason this number grew from 12.5 to 13.5. If it touches 14, I'll be all over the Thunder tonight.
And finally, in closing, Mark, I know college football season, you know, it's the off season right now, but I guess the Oregon Ducks didn't get that memo. And it's funny, the Ducks stocks have always sort of been soft, and you know Tiger probably came in here and told these kids, you know, we got to toughen up. We're going to get tougher yet. I don't think he wanted to send three kids to the hospital in his first week. Pretty shaky stuff there, Mark. They suspended the strength and conditioning coach. Yeah, this is an awkward start for Taggart in the Duck program right now that can't help recruiting either, man, when you're sending kids to the hospital like this.
No, he's got to get things cleaned up ASAP and send a message out there that this is not the kind of program that we want to run here at Oregon, especially a new head coach. I thought it was an excellent hire for this football program here, but again, the message has to be sent and delivered here that Oregon will not stand for these sort of situations moving forward.
Hey, thanks for the time, Mark. It's always a pleasure.
Hey, Gabe, my pleasure. Enjoy the games. Be good, bud. Bye-bye.
Yeah, the Oregon Ducks, you know, the Oregon Ducks, they want to get tougher. They bring in Willie Taggart as their head coach. You know, a dude who's coached at lower-tier programs before where you can get away with psychotic crap, right? So Taggart shows up with a strength and conditioning coach, and they did military-style training. And I guess kids were passing out, and it's extremely rare, but I guess they it was so strenuous. They made him do push-ups for a consecutive hour. Now, I can do that no problem, of course, but I understand these college kids. College kids having a problem. Consecutive push-ups for an hour? I don't think I can do consecutive push-ups for 60 seconds. We've got younger and in better in shape kids on the other side of the camera here. How long, Mikey, do you think you do consecutive push-ups for?
No.
2 minutes? 1 minute, he says. What about camera two, Drew? What do you say, Drew?
5 minutes.
Maybe. 5 minutes. There's no way in hell you can do 5 minutes. I'll bet right now. Warman says you're lying.
9 seconds.
Oh, we'll do it right now on the table. I'll bet big money. You're lucky we have Tom Brady's father coming up next. Otherwise, we'll get you on the table and yeah, 5 minutes. I'm taking the under in that. All right. Tom Brady Sr. joins us next. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morenci. We're extremely excited to welcome the man that joins us right now. We've talked about this New England Patriot football team, and we've talked about the Pittsburgh Steeler game with people from all different aspects. But we haven't spoken to a blood relative, and we haven't gotten a breakdown from a family perspective. And we're now joined by the father of the greatest quarterback ever to play in the National Football League. And I've said that before. I'm not saying it just right now. Tom Brady Sr. joins us on the program. Welcome to the Fantasy Sports Network, sir. Thanks a lot for taking the time to be with us.
Thanks, Gabe. Nice to be on the phone with you today. Thanks very much.
What does it sound strange when you hear people say, you know, your son's the greatest quarterback in the history of the National Football League?
You know, it really does. We it is hard to kind of take that to heart. We love watching the games and stuff, and we were here for the dynasty of the 49ers in the 80s and early 90s, and we have Joe Montana near and dear to our heart. So when Tommy's mentioned in the same sentence or in the same conversation, and perhaps even in a conversation that surpasses Joe, it's certainly hard for us to believe.
What?
But at the same time, it's so complimentary to Tommy for his hard work. I mean, he's one of the hardest working guys in the league, and you know, it's nice to see that hard work pays off.
Did you ever get an opportunity to meet Joe Montana as a fan when you were going to the 49er games, or did you meet him after the fact? And are there football players that you've met because of your son? After you're like, man, this is the greatest thing ever. I never thought I'd be standing here with Ronnie Lott, but here I am right now because you are a hardcore football fan, aren't you?
Our family are hardcore fans, and yeah, we've met a bunch of players at the old 49ers, and you know, a bunch of players across the whole spectrum, and you know, I've always enjoyed them. I don't know that I've ever been a fanboy and been crazy. I don't think I've ever worn a jersey of any player at any time anywhere, but I do appreciate what they do on the field, and I I have enjoyed, you know, I think the first time I wrote a composition in school, in grammar school, I think it was about 1951, and I was writing about the 49ers at that time. So I love football, have always loved football, and enjoyed the players. It's been a passion of our families.
Of course, Tom played at Michigan, and unfortunately, I'm a Buffalo Bills fan, and your son's caused me a lot of distress over the years. Like, it's been painful, and it's just, there's nothing we can do. You know, there's nothing we can do about it until he retires, basically. But fortunately, I've been on the right side of the Brady magic. I'm a Michigan Wolverine fan. How did he end up at Michigan? Did you want him to stay closer to home? You know, or did he say, you know what, I'm going to go to the Midwest? Because I know there were some opportunities to play in the state of California, but how did he end up at Michigan?
Well, when he was a junior in high school, we had done a recruiting tape, but we had collated it and put it to music and got endorsements from a high school coach and then his quarterback mentor. And I sat down with him, and we went through all of the schools that he would consider going to if he had the opportunity to play football. And we had the tape reproduced about 53 or 54 times, and we sent these tapes to all of the schools. But the one school, when we were talking about where we were going to send it out to, was Michigan. And, you know, the winged helmets and all of the glory days. And it always seemed that he had a soft place in his heart for the Wolverines. And so when it came down to the last five schools, and then finally the last two, it came down to UC Berkeley and Michigan. And I dearly wanted him to go to Berkeley, because Berkeley's 30 miles away from where we live. I used to go to college football games there. And I figured if he played football on Saturday, we could still play golf on Sunday. So when he decided to go to Michigan, which is 1,760 miles away, that it really broke my heart. But on the other hand, had he not gone to Michigan, I doubt very much that he would be where he is, because Cal said you'll be as a sophomore, junior, and senior, you'll be the starter. And Michigan said, hey, you come here, you'll be seventh on the depth chart. And his choice was, hey, Dad, you got to go beat the best to be the best. So he chose to go to Michigan.
Yeah, that's amazing that he wanted to compete at the time, because, of course, you know, Brian Greasy is there, and then Drew Henson. And at the time, sir, I'm sure I don't have to, you know, refresh your memory. If people were betting on who the NFL star was going to be, it was Drew Henson. People are like, oh, Drew Henson's going to be the top pick in the NFL draft. Yeah, Tom Brady's a great college quarterback, but we have to play Drew Henson. And, I don't know if there was a resentment or it was hurtful at the time, but it just seemed like everyone was 1,000% Drew Henson's the next big thing. Drew ends up taking the early money to play baseball. And of course, you know, subsequently we know what happened. What was that like from a father's perspective, thinking, you know, my son's kicking ass out here, and they keep talking about this Drew Henson kid now?
Yeah, well, he had put in 3 years there when Henson got to campus, and it had always been Lloyd Carr's posture to reward the older player rather than the younger player, and he changed his formula when Drew Henson got there. And but you know, that's okay. Drew was a heck of a great athlete. I mean, he was supposedly the greatest thing since Jim Thorpe, and may have been had he been able to vote more time to the development of his skills, because he really was a great athlete, a great baseball player.
Yeah.
Hit the ball and was a good pitcher and played third base, but he was also a great football player. But you know, when you get up to the collegiate level, these guys are all-stars. And so, and then when you move on to the pro level, they're the all-stars of the all-stars. And unless you've really had time to develop your skills, it's almost impossible to maintain that level of athletic superiority. So, you know, he cut it short in going to the Yankees, and then he came back and had lost a few years, and that's tough. We empathize with him. Drew's a really nice guy, and know him, and Tommy has a tremendous amount of respect and friendship with him, and but that's just, you know, sometimes we're not quite sure what the best was, but I think his first love happened to be baseball, and so it didn't work out. But that being said, you know, Tommy had maintained the relationship, friendship with him, and it's just the way it is. So yeah, the Michigan fans were well within their right, and probably had the inside track to appreciating Drew's skills, because he had a lot of great ones.
Well,
it was a little tough on Tommy.
As a Michigan fan, I'm pleased to see Tom back at the stadium now that Harbaugh's there, and the tradition is sort of being reinstalled once again. But let's talk about the game this week against the Steelers. A lot of talk was made about Tomlin saying, hey, these a-holes have had a head start on us. I wouldn't take it personal. Did the Patriots take this personal? Do you take this personal? And what's your take on the game against the Steelers this week?
You know, you don't take it personal. Tomlin's just trying to get his team fired up, and you know that's a lot of it's just a lot of hot air as far as the Patriots concerned. That being said, Bill Belichick will certainly not let that pass the bulletin board in Boston and not be pasted right in the middle of it, because as every team is want to do, they want to get a level of incentive and light a fire over under their team and be an underdog. And in this case, you get bulletin board material, and I'm sure that the Patriots will be made aware of it.
I wanted to ask you about Roger Goodell. I know a lot of people. I actually do a radio hit weekly on WEI, in which I get my picks before the games. And I know there's been a lot of talk on the network and the station about Roger Goodell not going to the AFC Conference Championship game again. At this point, it might be good luck not to have him there, actually. But what's your take on Roger Goodell not going to Boston right now? And is there still any resentment with you and your son about how everything was handled?
The answer is the commissioner could go anywhere that he wants to go. As far as we're concerned, him not being there isn't going to impact us one way or the other. I personally have tried to let it go. It doesn't serve anybody's purpose to carry this thing on. I think the Patriots are going to be fine with or without him there. And if they get to the Super Bowl, they'll be fine with him there or not there. And all they're concerned about and all I'm hopeful for is that we raise the Lombardi Trophy in Houston. And whether or not he's there or not, I could care less.
Well, the last time the Super Bowl was in Houston, we remember what happened. You raised the Lombardi Trophy, and Janet Jackson raised something else.
That was quite a ball game.
it was
quite a halftime show.
Pretty memorable. Yeah, I'm wondering what Lady Gaga has in store this year, sir.
I remember that was quite a second half shootout, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
Panthers.
Crazy.
That was a great ball game. It was a little dull for the first half, and then the fireworks went off in the second half, and we marched down the field after with just a couple of seconds left, and got a few field goal from about 35 yards. And actually, as I remember, Adam Vinatieri missed one or had one blocked early in the game. And so it was tough sledding there. But my goodness, this Pittsburgh team is going to be tough this weekend. Le'Veon Bell is a beast, and you know, when you go to Antonio Brown, and my God, you know, Ben Roethlisberger, you don't get him much better than that. He's a stud. So we got our work cut out for us, and I think that we're going to be we'll be ready. Hopefully, our readiness is going to result in a W at the end of the game.
I can't wait for these games. Going to be a great weekend of football. Tom Brady Sr. with us. Congratulations, sir, on just quite a journey it must be, watching your son accomplish the things that he has. Thanks a lot for taking the time to be with us on the Fantasy Sports Network, sir.
You're welcome. Good talk to you, Gabe. Take care.
There's Tom Brady Sr. with us. We take a quick break. Dave Martinez joins us next. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morenci. Thanks to Mark Lawrence and to Tom Brady Sr. for joining us on the program. We shift gears. Dade Martinez, a.k.a. Speeds, host of Shot Callers every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 7 o'clock Eastern on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, steps up and in and joins us. We'll talk about these games, get his picks, maybe some DFS value plays as well. Dade, welcome to the program, man. How you doing?
I'm doing well. How you feeling, Gabe? You had TB12's dad in the place, huh?
Yeah, that's pretty cool, actually. It's pretty unique. I told people last night, you'll never guess who's coming on the show tomorrow. And I got all kinds of bad guesses. People are like Andy Dick. people are like Pierre Trudeau, Prime Minister of Canada. Like, no, why would, like, you know, Andy Dick actually be pretty funny?
Yeah. It would be funny. Yeah, I don't know if he could help you at Whiteout, too, though.
No, I don't know. Maybe I'd like to get Andy Dick's fantasy advice, exactly. But his fantasies and our fantasy, probably two different things.
Different things.
But nevertheless, we've got the Packers and the Falcons here, and it's amazing. When you look at the proficiency of these two quarterbacks coming into this football game, since November the 20th, Aaron Rodgers throwing 24 touchdown passes and just one interception. Matt Ryan, 14 touchdown passes, zero interceptions, and a QB rating of 131 during the five-game win streak. This is as good as it gets right now, and I swear, man, there might only be, like, you know, three punts max in this football game.
Yeah, being a punter is good work if you could get it with these teams. These guys also played to a 33-32 game in week 7 or 8, I believe, and it was one of those games where the last team with the ball is the one that winds up getting the win, and I think that's, again, what's going to happen in this NFC Championship game. Get the abacuses ready. You're absolutely right. These defenses are not going to be able to stop it. You know, we got guys coming off the street playing the secondary for the Green Bay Packers. I actually think that this is going to weigh that Matty Ice is going to shut down the Georgia Dome with a victory. I like the Falcons in this game, and I'll take the over. This over has moved to above, I think it's 60.5, and I say still take the over. A lot of fantasy goodness in this one.
I like where you're going with that. I agree with you. I think they are going to close out the Georgia Dome with a victory as well. And, you know, I look at this Falcon team, actually, and I'm looking at the numbers. They put up 540 points this year. It's the eighth most in NFL history, and it only really occurred to me just a couple of minutes ago, actually, when I was talking to Lawrence earlier in the program. You know, they remind me of, they're like the fastest show on turf.
Absolutely.
This is like the Rams. It's very similar, man. You got Isaac Bruce, Julio Jones, you got Sanu, Torrey Holt, you've got your, you know, yes, they're even deeper, you know, you got your Gabriels and mixed in, and then, you know, everyone always, like, who can you compare Devontae Freeman to? Who do you compare him to? He's so unique, but he is almost like Marshall Faulk. You know, he's catching him and Coleman. It's a combination. Yep. I think they're very similar to that old school Ram team offensively.
I completely agree with you. I think it's almost, you can almost call him Devontae Coleman, right? Because you don't know which one you're going to get. Both of them are locked and loaded. I like that analogy to the greatest show on turf. And to be quite honest, I think a lot of teams are trying to do this, have a spread offense where they let the quarterback change the plays at the line and let the defense dictate where the ball goes. A lot of teams are trying to do this. Detroit made the move this way to, instead of keying on Megatron, to try to utilize all the the weapons. Washington is doing this a lot, but I think Atlanta is doing this indoors on turf and with, like you said, Gabe, the best weapons around. Obviously, you know about Julio, you know about this backfield with Coleman and Freeman, but they have enough weapons to really spread the ball around. And the other thing, don't forget about Alex Mack, the guy they got from Cleveland to be the center. I think this it stabilized this offensive line and has really prevented Matty Ice from falling off a cliff that he has fallen down in previous seasons. They've only had one offensive line lineup the entire season. That stability is, I think, what's going to lead Matt Ryan to the MVP and the Falcons to Super Bowl 51.
Yeah, you know what? Coleman's a little cheaper than Freeman. And Coleman, man, you know, he's by definition not the number one starting running back, but nevertheless, he's got touchdowns in four of his last five football games as well. Mm-hmm. Montgomery has been great as well, obviously. Even rushing a football, averaging 5.9 a clip. You like any value guys in this game at all?
Yeah, I'm actually, this week, the way I'm putting together my lineup, I'm trying to get value at the wide receiver spot and at the tight end spot. I think whichever tight end actually goes for Pittsburgh is the way I want to go, whether that's Ladarius Green if he gets out of the cold, dark, quiet room in the protocol, or if it's Jesse James. So that's where I'm going at tight end.
Even that Hooper kid, man. Hooper looked pretty good last week, actually.
So I'll tell you what I like in this game. I like Taylor Gabriel. I like him big time because you know Julio is a beast, and they're going to put a lot of attention on Julio. But the thing is, Julio also is nursing that toe, that foot injury. He only played 50% of the snaps in that last game, okay? Taylor Gabriel is the guy that they like over the top. He's the guy they hit up with little bubble screens that he tries to take 50, 60 yards. I think that's the value. I'm looking over at FanDuel. He's only 6,000. I think that's good value and would allow you to pay up for some of the studs at running back if you want to try to fit Le'Veon Bell, or I know we'll get into it a little bit later. I like Deion Lewis as well at the running back spot. So I think you can find some value with Tyler Gabriel in this NFC Championship game.
Yeah, unfortunately, we're already out of time right now. So you like Deion Lewis here. It's interesting. A lot of people I see like LeGarrette Blount. It's always tough with the Patriots because they mix it up so much, but I don't see them going away from Lewis when he was as effective as, exactly. as he was last week. All right, we got to get out of here, but who do you like to win that game, Patriots or Steelers?
You know, I'm a Jets fan, so I objectively can't say the Patriots. I do think Pittsburgh has a line on them. Bud Dupree might injure Tom Brady. Sorry, Dad.
I like where you're going at, actually, with Bud Dupree. The guy's a stud, and, you know, I wasn't going to tell Tom Brady's father this is, but it's true. The Patriots are like a great team to play in a bad college football conference.
Exactly.
Your Jets suck. My Bills are terrible, and it's the true. Dolphins are irrelevant.
But he's a 39-year-old man. He's a 39-year-old man who feels the pressure and starts to complain just like Eli Manning.
Yeah, no, he's going to play forever, dude. He's far from being done, Brady. Hey, thanks for the time, Dane.
Anytime, Gabe.
All right, here's Dane Martinez with us. We'll come back with our plays of the day. We'll have more NFL talk with the Raging Redhead Cam Stewart on Morenci Unfiltered at midnight tonight. It's time for our plays of the day. One of the hardest things to do when you're doing this on a daily basis and you cover as many sports as we do is to stay on top of all of the streaks. And then you look back and you're like, man, the Falcons are 14-2-1 to the over this year. Why don't we just bet the over every week? Well, right now, one of the hottest streaks in sports betting, the Washington Wizards on their home court. They're 11-1 against the spread in their last 12 games. They've won 12 in a row on their home court. And they're only laying a deuce tonight against the Memphis Grizzlies. I like them to get it done. Tonight I'm going to ride the wave. I like this game to go over 207 points as well. Raptors and 76ers. Raptors going back to back like everybody else always is in the association. But Kyle Lowry's going to be in the lineup tonight. Philadelphia is playing better basketball. This game goes over 215 points. College basketball. Gamecocks getting no respect whatsoever. Dominant team with Thornwell in the lineup. We'll lay the 1.5 in this basketball game against the visiting Florida Gators. Give me the points with the Fighting Irish and the Leprechauns, plus 6.5 against FSU. Notre Dame and FSU over 155 points, and a couple of puck picks for you. After Pittsburgh, all those goals the other night against Washington, everyone's going to be on the over tonight. We're going to go under 5.5, and let's go under 5.5 in the Bruins and the Red Wings. Other night, you're on your own. May the winners be yours.